the populist economic measures that don't add up in Italy, and the corruption trial over Nigerian oil. This is the Marketplace Morning Report, live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. In Italy, the far-right League and the populist Five Star Movement have joined forces after March's inconclusive election. Their economic plan, most analysts say, will be impossible to implement, especially if it breaks the EU's sacred 3% budget deficit rule. Enrico Colombato teaches economics at the University of Turin.
They are arguing about three points. One is the so-called flat tax. The other thing is the basic income. And the third thing is reform of the pension system. The bottom line is that they don't have a clue. If they carried out what they promised, you would have something like 100 billion euros extra deficit, which is more or less 5% of GDP.
So I imagine that Italy's European partners would have a lot to say about this. Is there anything they can do to make two anti-establishment parties listen?
Well, to begin with, they have already stated that they are not sure when these reforms would be implemented. It would be spread out over the years. Now, what that means, nobody knows. I think that what the European authorities are going to do is just wait and see and then say, look, if you go over the 3% threshold, you get sanctioned. I do not think that the future government will take that lightly. I think in the short run, they will do very little.
What's the mood amongst business leaders in Italy, given what's being discussed?
Well, the mood is relatively quiet in that business people believe that this government will be very cautious despite the bombastic announcements. So the less they do, the better it is for business.
Enrico Colombato. Let's do the numbers. Investors have mostly shrugged off Italy's political developments. European markets are only slightly down. Meanwhile, prospects of a thaw in U.S.-China trade tensions boosted Asian markets as President Trump pledged to help ZTE Corp, quote, get back into business fast after a U.S. ban crippled the Chinese technology company. A trial opens in Milan today involving two big oil companies, Royal Dutch Shell and Italy's Eni. The charges surround a deal in 2011 when the companies reportedly transferred money into a Nigerian government account. They deny any wrongdoing. Barnaby Pace at Global Witness, which has campaigned to hold the companies to account, explains.
The UK and Italy's biggest companies, Shell and the Italian oil giant Eni, together with some of their most senior executives, will stand trial accused of corruption in a billion-dollar deal for some of Nigeria's most promising oil drilling rights. No company as large as Shell has ever stood trial for corporate bribery. Executives as senior as Eni's current CEO and the former number two at Shell are facing jail time if convicted. The $1.1 billion that Shell and its partner Eni paid for this block in 2011 should have gone to benefit the Nigerian people. Shell executives were told that the money would flow to some of the most powerful people in the country, including the then president Goodluck Jonathan. But that $1 billion could have funded the entire Nigerian health budget. And for context, 1 in 10 Nigerian children don't live to see their fifth birthday. So the impact this money could have made is enormous.
Barnaby Pace outside the courthouse. Working windmills in the Netherlands are a rarity, which is why they were given World Heritage status this year. The BBC's Anna Holligan reports from IJsselstein.
Martin Dolman produces 1,000 kilos of flour here every day. He has been packing his jute sacks with granules for 3 decades.
Here we have the millstone.
So the wind turns the sails turn the wheels, the millstone grinds the flour makes the bread.
Yeah, right. This mill is built in 1732, when the millers were older. And we have now young millers. They learn to windmill, and then it's for the next generation.
The UNESCO recognition isn't just a symbolic victory. It's also going to bring more money for internships, for training, and that kind of thing. Is that right?
Yeah, we hope it.
Maybe we could step outside.
We have in Holland 50 windmills. Grind every day, and we have in Holland 1200 windmills grind on Saturday, and so that is a hobby miller. This is a professional miller.
And professional because there is still, the evidence of the demand for this is, well, the fact that your sales are still turning, but also there's a shop downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
You turn these sales and you make a profit from the wind.
Yeah, right.
What do you do here? You're putting the flour yes. into the paper bag.
I'm a volunteer. I'm retired now. This is perfectly fitting for me. This mill is especially for Eiselstein.
Yeah.
So, you're proud to be a citizen of Eiselstein?
I wonder why people come here instead of going to the supermarket.
Oh, this is much better.
And it really tastes different to the supermarket. Yeah.
It's much better.
Is there also a feeling of pride when you're buying this, that you're investing in something that's so culturally important?
You want to keep the mill. It's so typical.
That's a Dutch shopper at a rare working windmill. And I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.